ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. And one guinea pig, in his time, plays many parts. Oh, wait, should that be her time? I'm Farza Draki, and this is Days Like These. Today, a Shakespearean story of two houses, both alike in dignity. Only one of those houses is a hutch. And a warning, this story contains descriptions of animal neglect. If that's not something you wish to hear, you might want to give this one a miss. It all begins when two people fall in love in the 60s. I'll let reporter Lisa DeVisi set the scene.
Vanessa's parents met when they were around 18 years old. Her mum, Dolly, was a young nurse, and her dad, Peter, played a lot of soccer. It was the collision of these two worlds that brought them together. Here's Vanessa.
He had a terrible accident on the soccer field. I think he tore the cartilage in the knees. So he was in hospital and mum was his nurse. And so when he got better, they started to date.
And then they got married and became Mr. and Mrs. Bates.
And my dad joined the RAF.
The Royal Australian Air Force.
And I was born in 68.
Vanessa was a sensible and studious kid with a classic eldest child sense of duty. After her, there was Amanda, affectionately known as AJ. Vanessa, how would you describe AJ?
I think I would have to say stoic. She put up with a lot and she was very patient.
Then another girl, Tony.
Well, Tony was always the naughty one.
When the girls were teenagers, Tony infamously nicked Vanessa's driver's license and attempted to drive her red VW Beetle to the club.
And she crashed it, trying to get it out of the garage.
And last but not least, there was one final girl, Kerry.
And Kerry is about 11 years younger than me, so she was kind of the baby of the family.
Even from a young age, Kerry had the sensibility of a nurse, a unique mix of kindness and practicality, and she loved animals. With their dad Peter in the Air Force, the girls grew up on base and moved around a lot.
We lived in Malaysia, we lived in Hoppers Crossing and Werribee.
During their time in Malaysia, their mum Dolly was diagnosed with breast cancer. She got treatment and the cancer went into remission.
And we ended up in Raymond Terrace, which is half an hour or so out of Newcastle.
Raymond Terrace is further inland than Newcastle and the closest town to the Air Force Base in Williamtown. Dolly, Peter and the kids began putting down roots.
We've got three big girls in high school and then you've got one little girl, Kerry, who was at primary school.
One day, AJ brings home an ice cream container from school. Snuffling, scratching and eeping from inside it is a guinea pig. Guinea pigs are pets for children whose parents don't want pets. They're less maintenance than a dog, but more sentient than a pet rock. They're what you give to a kid to road test their ability to care for something. A kind of starter pet.
They've all got those, you know, those, I'm doing it now, those those teeth, you know, those kind of incisors. And they've all got the twitchy nose and the sort of rolling eyeballs.
Guinea pigs vocalise by squeaking, a sort of eep, eep sound. They have bigger, fatter cheeks than mice. In fact, they kind of look like one big fat cheek with tiny hands. They come in all sorts of colours and hairstyles, from short and straight to long and curly. Their pelts any combination of black, white, sandy brown and tan. Some of them look like they've just rolled out of bed, and others look like they want to speak to the manager. This guinea pig, though, the one in the ice cream container, looks like a little angel. And her name is Harriet.
She was one of those guinea pigs where the hair grows from the nose towards the tail. And she was brown, like dark brown patches.
Harriet is gentle, shy and nervous, but good with people. Her little whiskers twitch as she snuffles and eeps. The girls are enchanted.
We loved Harriet. And of course, you know, we could pat her and hold her and pass her around.
Peter, who happens to be quite handy, does the classic dad thing and builds Harriet a hutch.
It was a wooden box with chicken wire over the front, and you could lift the lid so you could take it off and put newspaper down. And it was in the backyard, so it was sheltered. So it meant that when she ran out onto the chicken wire bit, there was some grass. It was very nice.
Soon enough, talk turns to whether they think Harriet is a bit lonely. Guinea pigs are known social animals.
We were all, you know, worried about her. But I have to say, I do think that perhaps Tony had something in her head where she thought, yes, I can get another guinea pig this way. So maybe she pushed the loneliness.
Tony's loneliness angle pays off. Her mum Dolly agrees, and Tony is sent to fetch a female friend for kind, reserved, well-behaved, angelic, beautiful Harriet. The guinea pig that Tony chooses has a bit of a wild side.
Harriet, sweet, you know, smooth hair, brown. This guinea pig had hair sticking up everywhere. It was like a punk sort of guinea pig.
This guinea pig has a natural distrust of authority. She seems more interested in life outside the cage than life in it.
We called her Ophelia. I kind of campaigned for the name because I was doing Hamlet at high school.
Vanessa is a playwright now, by the way. Despite their differences in temperament, Ophelia and Harriet get along. In my mind, this is because Harriet is a calming, grounding force for fiery Ophelia. And in turn, Ophelia pushes Harriet to get out of her comfort zone. I can just imagine warm nights in the hutch, Harriet making them both a cup of tea while Ophelia pontificates on the importance of resisting human supremacy, aka little pats on the snoot. They push each other to be their best guinea pig selves. Or so I imagine.
They were kind of snuffling and eyeballing each other. They were friendly and then they were together. And we were happy because Harriet was happy. And they were getting along really well, eating together, eeping together.
And after some time, the sisters notice that Harriet is changing.
Harriet was getting fatter, a lot fatter. And when you held her, after a few weeks, you could feel in her sides that there was something in there. Like, and we thought, it's impossible. She can't be pregnant. Surely not. No way. You know, there were two girls.
Tony, you had one job.
Maybe she's just fatter, but we could feel these things in her, you know, tummy. I know, it's very weird. And then one day we came out and there were the guinea pigs. It was four guinea pigs.
Four little babies. Harriet has given birth overnight to four adorable babies.
They were like tiny, tiny versions of the parents. And they were so cute.
Turns out Harriet and Ophelia aren't just an odd couple, one a punk, one the classic good girl. They're a couple. And Ophelia's a boy. So that warm night in the hutch was not what I thought it was.
There was some discussion about maybe Ophelia should be called Hamlet, but, you know, no one was very keen on that. It was a bit too much work.
So Ophelia stays Ophelia. Gender is a construct. Back to the babies.
The one that looked like Harriet, we called Cuthbert. And the two that looked like Ophelia, we called them Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, which is, again, Hamlet. And then the other anonymous one that I can't remember what its name was.
It's a full house at Harriet and Ophelia's. The hutch needs to be extended, but not before the Bates family do so for themselves. Dolly and Peter, along with high school-aged Vanessa, AJ and Tony, plus primary school-aged Kerry, move their six guinea pigs and two dogs into their first non-Royal Australian Air Force-issued home. For the first time, the Bateses are living off-base, in a house that Dolly and Peter built for themselves. It has a huge backyard, which can be seen from the balcony. The guinea pig years are now in full swing. Within a few short months, six guinea pigs becomes 10. 10 becomes 14? 18? Too many for just the hutch anyway.
And it may have been Kerry who did it, open the gate, you know, and as in allowed them to roam. I can remember looking at them through the window and just watching them sort of galloping across the plains. It was like the plains of the Serengeti, you know, and stopping all at once and grazing. You know, and you feel a certain amount of contentedness, like, oh, you know, that's our herd, that's great.
Over the course of a year or two, the herd grows to around 40. It's impossible to keep track of whose babies are whose.
They were no longer animals that we picked up and petted. I might pick up Cuthbert now and then, or Harriet, but none of the others. They were just like a herd. We were now like shepherds. When they saw you or heard you, that's when they started to make the noise. And, of course, if they were squealing loudly, my mother would say, they're hungry, go and get some food for the guinea pigs. And that was like, oh, you had to drop whatever you were doing and go and get the food. Go to the laundry door, open the door, and just after a while we were just flinging stuff out or over the balcony.
These are the fat years, the years of plenty. Food literally rains down from the heavens onto the herd. To quote Shakespeare's Henry VI, who, let's face it, is probably also a guinea pig at this point, part two. Wherefore over a brick wall have I climbed into this garden, to see if I can eat grass, or pick a salad another while, which is not amiss to cool a guinea pig's stomach this hot weather.
We used to go to vacant lots and cut with gardening shears, and we would cut clover, like loads of clover for them.
The guinea pigs are Shakespearean in more ways than one. There's comedy, sure, but there's tragedy too.
One of the guinea pigs, and it may have been Cuthbert, gave birth to a guinea pig that had a problem with its back feet and they were kind of twisted or something. I remember my mum bringing the guinea pig and saying, this guinea pig is probably going to die. It was a baby. And we said, oh, no, leave it. It's okay. We can just bring more grass and put it up. Because it couldn't walk. The next day, some bastard guinea pig had chewed its feet off. But it was still alive, right? But it had no feet. And my mum brought it inside and she was showing it to us and saying, now we're going to have to put it down. I was saying, no, you can't do that. No, I'll look after it. She said, no, you can't look after it. It's got no feet. And she said, well, I have to do it. I'm really sorry, but I've got this bucket of water and I'm going to drown it. And so my mum drowned the guinea pig. And I went crazy. I remember I was crying. My mum actually slapped my face because I was so hysterical. I had a dream about a tray of guinea pigs shown to me, and the guinea pigs were like missing ears and feet and nose in a row, and at the very end there was just a black stone.
The next day, it's back to business as usual. While the older sisters are distracted by the trappings of high school,
music, trying to go out secretively to clubs, drinking Malibu and milk, hideous.
Sensible young Kerry gets on with the job.
She would hose out the cage and make sure that they had some kind of food.
And then Dolly finds out the cancer that she had years ago is back. Suddenly, daily life at the Bates household is hijacked by doctor's appointments, scans, and chemo. For the girls, the mental load of shepherding guinea pigs is replaced by the infinitely heavier mental load of having a mother with cancer.
I feel guilty, even just talking about it, but I think, yes, there wasn't the urge to feed them. It was kind of like, oh, throw a few pellets their way, and they've got the grass. And with Mum, when she was sick and I would come home to massage her, I don't remember going out to feed the guinea pigs. I might have glanced at them out of Mum's window, but not, okay, now I've massaged my mother, so now I'm going to feed the guinea pigs. It was like every man for himself.
Freed from the vestiges of domestication, the herd becomes truly wild. They roam, graze, and move as one. The mere sound of a twig snap or footsteps triggers 40 pairs of eyes to look up at once, whiskers twitching. What used to be a calming presence of closeness and connection with their herd is now severed, distant, and beastly.
Unnerving, I would say, is a good description of what a herd of guinea pigs is like, because they kind of wheel and run at the same time, like maybe like Brumbies, you know.
In the wilderness, there are the hunters and the hunted.
We knew that there was a hawk that flew around the house, and we realised it had got the guinea pig.
Wild cats come by to snatch themselves a piggy dinner. And of course, there's the great retaining wall of death.
So you know those bricks, you know those concrete Besset bricks, they're hollow, right?
When they first moved in, Vanessa's dad Peter had a vision, a retaining wall at around 6 concrete bricks high. He'd fill in the hollow parts with steel rods and dirt and then cement over the top of them. Voila, beautiful home reno.
But he never finished the walls. It was never concreted over the top bit.
That's because Peter is needed elsewhere. If it's not caring for Dolly or taking her to appointments, it's the shopping or the cleaning or taking Kerry to and from netball.
The guinea pigs had realised there was grass growing up the top.
The grass is very famously greener on the other side.
Some of them managed to climb up on there, and then they were eating grass and then they fell down the holes in the wall. And it was terrible because, you know, we could hear them squeaking, eeping, and Kerry was terribly upset.
Kerry tries all sorts of things, but the hole is simply too deep. That night, it rains. And the next night, it rains. With hay, ho, the wind and rain. For the rain, it raineth every day.
And then, you know, after about a week, we couldn't hear them. It was finished.
Statistically speaking, it's possible that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are, well, you know.
Kerry would dig a grave for them and put a stone and then write on the stone with Tippex or liquid paper.
The guinea pig cemetery lies around the side of the house, not visible to the casual visitor or passerby. Even though in life the Bateses were beyond naming each guinea pig, there were just so many, Kerry makes sure that they have one in keeping with proper burial rites. This also means a funeral ceremony where every sister is invited.
And so out of a great sense of guilt and duty, we would attend.
None of the girls have been to a funeral before, including Kerry, but she knows that funerals are important and they're serious.
She sang a song for them. I wasn't going to church, but Kerry was going to a Catholic school and my mum still went to church. So we had all these great Catholic youth group kind of songs that we would sing. Sons of God, Hear his holy word, gather round the table of the Lord, eat his body, drink his blood, and we'll sing a song of love. Alleluia, 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 alleluia.
By this time, AJ and Tony have moved out of home. Vanessa is in her second year of university and has moved out too. Lately, though, she's been driving home to her parents each night to massage her mum and help ease the pain. The family is told Dolly's cancer is terminal.
She fought for a long time, but it metastasized and she had it in her bones.
Dolly's bones are so brittle that she breaks one in the night from rolling over.
Her leg bone had snapped. She had to go in the ambulance to the hospital, and I remember I was in the red VW Beetle following the ambulance very slowly because she was in so much pain. She had a tea towel that she had to bite on to kind of deal with the pain, and I remember they gave me the tea towel and there was blood on it. Yeah, so she went to hospital and she was in a hospice for a while and then she eventually died.
After Dolly passes away, it's just Peter and Kerry living in the house. So they decide to sell it.
My dad met the person who would be my stepmom, and she had two kids, and so they were going to move to a different house in Newcastle.
So they get to work, packing everything up, and on the last night, the four sisters come home for one last hurrah.
We weren't crying about the house. We were crying about our mum, and I think we were crying about that we were all about to go our separate ways. We were recognising that we were grown up.
When the girls were younger, they'd play together as the sisters in Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. Vanessa, being the writer of the house, was Jo March, of course.
The only time they were little women was that time when they were kids. And perhaps that was the same here. You know, perhaps we realised that, you know, that time of the four of us had gone. You know, when all the naughty things like Tony crashing the Beetle and stealing my driver's licence and using it, or me sneaking out and having the Malibu and Coke, you know, my sister Amanda being the first of us girls to shave her legs, and us all going, oh my God, that's so amazing and awesome. And having, you know, four girls and a herd of guinea pigs is a really, I think, a very unusual setup.
Wait, where are the guinea pigs?
I assumed that all the guinea pigs had gone, but in fact, there were some guinea pigs left, or at least one left.
According to Kerry, anyway.
I thought, well, you'll have to catch it and take it with you. But it was like, no, we can't catch it. It's, you know, it's wild. It's gone wild.
The guinea pig, or guinea pigs, are one with the land. It really is the end of an era. The sisters are all grown up now. Kerry is a nurse, just like her mum, and she had daughters just like her mum, and her daughters had...
Oh, my God, Kerry, how could you get more guinea pigs? Remember what happened to the last ones? Are they the same sex? Of course, they were not. And so Kerry ended up having baby guinea pigs. And so she was like, does Tristan want them? That's my son. Would he like some guinea pigs? I'm like, oh my God.
To eep or not to eep? That is the question.
Okay, yes, but we do need a cage. So we had to get a cage. And then Tristan had two guinea pigs, and then one died in the cage, and then the other one died of something. I don't know what. And I said, that's it, no more guinea pigs. It seemed like we were fated. We'd had the guinea pigs, we had the era, and now we couldn't have them. It's like you can't have nice things anymore.
Perhaps it's for the best, but it does leave me with one question. Did you ever find out how to identify the sex of a guinea pig?
Oh my God, there is a way. It's horrendous. And guess who found out, Kerry? You have to pick up the guinea pig that you think could be the boy, and then you hold it upside down and hold it back legs apart, and you kind of press on their kind of abdomen, and if they've got a penis, it will stick out. Isn't that repulsive? How revolting is that? But you know what? I know, see, you're laughing.
It's so funny.
That was Vanessa Bates speaking with reporter Lisa DeVisi. She's never owned a guinea pig. She's a cat person. Go figure. Sophie Townsend is our executive producer. She had a guinea pig called Davy, whose home was a bright yellow baby basket. One day, Davy was sent to live on a farm. The basket was cleaned and given back to her. Inside it was her new baby brother. Not as exciting. Our sound engineer was Russell Stapleton, who doesn't have anything positive to say about guinea pigs. The phrase obese rats came up. Days Like These was produced on the lands of the Wabakal and Worimi people, as well as the lands of the Bunurong, Woiwurrung and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nations. I'm Faza Draki, and I don't care what you say, but that guinea pig noise is the stuff of nightmares. See you next time.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good and bomb. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
What a bear. What a bear. Still checking each other out. Hey.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.